Hey, it's episode 411 of the 343 podcast. Interesting little factoid for all you young folks out there. 411, 411 was the number that you used to punch into your phone to dial to find out information. Nowadays, you don't need that at all. All you need is 343. That's where you get the real information from, not the propaganda that you get fed from US soccer, not the propaganda that you get from Major League Soccer, not the propaganda that you get from the media masquerading as journalists and reporters that MLS and US soccer control. No, here's where you get the real stuff. The real stuff. And speaking of propaganda, Benny uploaded a reel the other day that dealt with futsal, and we got a lot of people commenting, creating a shark frenzy in the comments, all based on the propaganda that they've been fed. The propaganda that, oh, futsal is a solution. No, it's not. Oh, pay to play is the problem. No, it's not. Oh, training compensation and solidarity payments would be great for America. No, it is not. Oh, we suck at soccer because the best athletes choose the other sports. No, it is not. And on and on and on. And that is the subject of today's episode. Benny brought a bunch of your comments from the Instagram comments, and I addressed them all. Speaking of mythologies we've all been fed growing up in our soccer careers, coaches, break away from those mythologies. If you are struggling with getting your teams to perform at a high level or at a satisfactory level or at a level that brings you joy, or you're struggling developing your players to become competent on the field on match days, we have some solutions for you. You go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. 2026 just got started. Make this a year to remember. Get your asses over there. Get the proven methodology. Yes, proven. I'm not paying you lip service, guys, when I say proven. This is the work of a pioneer, a true pioneer here in American soccer that has revolutionized over the past 20 years how American soccer develops its youth. Yes, youth soccer still sucks here because, listen, the work of one pioneer can't, I don't know, change from one day to the next that such that everybody does things in a very, very good way. So coaches, I won't belabor the point, but we get you accelerated on that curve. You don't have to keep struggling. You don't have to keep suffering. You don't have to keep perusing the online internet, the infinite information well of the internet. 343coaching.com. Get your ass started. You won't regret it. And parents, the same applies to you. You want to mentor and guide your kid as best as humanly possible. You're a huge factor in whether they become successful or not later in their lives, in soccer, otherwise, obviously. But in soccer, you go to 343masterclass.com. That is where we codified our decades worth of experience at every single level, every single age group, both genders, up to and including professionals, in a way and through a lens that helps parents. So 343masterclass.com, parents, that's where you should go. And last but certainly not least, if you're coaching in the 7-versus-7 environment, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode. Here we go. Okay, hit me with the topics, Ben.
All right. Well, as you know, Gary, I posted a short clip from the episode that we just posted. And I know you titled the episode U.S. Soccer's Big Questions, Why No World-Class Players, Pro-Rel Culture, and 2026 Future. I'd really like to, if you don't mind, Gary, hone in on the Why No World-Class Players. The post that I just posted yesterday, already like 100 comments on it, and a lot of misguided views, Gary. A lot of, even though it seems like we talk about this a lot, Gary, I still think people are not grasping. And so I'm hoping that we can really dive deep into some of those comments and extract. I know the big solution, right, is there's no open system, but I know there's a lot more to expand on than that because it seems like people aren't understanding what it is that is causing this. So if you don't mind, I'd like to get into that at the end as well. I don't know if you heard about the Argentine national team and this new rule that they're implementing. Did you hear about that yet or no?
Nope.
Nothing, no? I'm surprised.
Nope.
All right, well, I'll save that for the end, Gary. And again, I know that we talked about this on the last episode. It was in response to Facundo's question, but I think we only maybe touched on the topic for 10 minutes. So let's dive deep into it and let's really break it down.
Okay. Yeah, that's totally fine. Well, should we apologize for our die-hard listeners in advance if we're repetitive on this topic? Because I think we have to be repetitive in many respects for what you just said. People just don't get it. And the only way you end up getting it, even the diehards, Benny, it takes so many times to hear it and from different angles and over and over and over again before it finally clicks. You know, because I know for myself included, Benny, I was blind forever. And I've talked about it forever since, you know, I was there at the inaugural season of MLS, 1996. I went to watch the LA Galaxy. I would go to the Rose Bowl. I saw, you know, Melrose Place actor Andrew Hsu, you know, be on the LA Galaxy roster and get a cameo appearance in an actual match. And all of that is a marketing ploy. So I was into that scene and in that bubble forever. And it took me, God, a decade, Benny, to even start appreciating the things that we're going to be repetitive about today. And even another decade for me to dive down the rabbit hole to really, really solidify and understand the labyrinth that exists. So disclaimer in advance, we're going to be talking about a lot of things that we always talk about. I think it's important, but yeah, just give it a go. Let's see where it takes. Yeah. I'm going to ask you too, Benny, to maybe extract new angles from me, because, you know, usually I just get on the same sort of rails over and over and over again.
I'll try my best, Gary. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the famous video that you and Brian posted, fuck, it must have been 10 years ago when you guys are talking about the problem with soccer in America. I don't think in that video, Gary, that you mentioned a lack of an open system, right?
Right.
So even back then, I mean, I'm sure you maybe had a grasp on it, but you weren't like saying like, hey, this is the major issue, right? I know in that video, you guys were saying the issue is we lack an identity. We don't have a culture. But if you were to do that video again today, Gary, would your words be completely different?
They're more crisp, more precise, and obviously much better understanding. I think I do kind of hint at it but it's like I'm going around the perimeter and not really hitting the bullseye. It's kind of like, hey, we have the infrastructure. We have a huge soccer first households and population. I was telling people back then we have everything, but then I didn't hone in to, okay, what is required to bring it all together? That wasn't there yet. So again, I repeat myself, even myself, who I've been in this business 24/7, my entire freaking life, look how blind I was. So of course, these people, when they first come across an Instagram reel or even have listened to 20 of our podcast episodes where we talk about it, of course, they're still not going to get it.
Yeah. What was the defining moment for you when everything kind of clicked, right? You realize like, fuck, the true root of the problem is that it's not an open system. I mean, I'm sure it didn't happen overnight where you just woke up one morning and you're like, fuck, that's it. That's the solution.
There wasn't one moment, Benny. I think it was all a gradual evolution and kind of circling the drain, you know, and eventually getting down the drain and hitting the bullseye. So I can't pinpoint. It's just a whole collection of the puzzle pieces being put together little by little by little by little. And lo and behold, after a certain period of time, oh, wow, I completed the puzzle. But you don't remember the last puzzle piece that you put in to complete the puzzle.
Yeah, I got you. All right, Gary, well, let's get into it. And just so people are aware, the reel that I had posted, it's a two-part reel, so I'm posting the next one today. But in the first half of it, and by the way, Facundo's comment was, there's 347 million people in the U.S. There's 45 million in Argentina. Why can't the U.S. produce just one crack? Okay, and so in the reel that I had posted, you're saying that the issue is not the population. The issue is not the numbers. There's somewhere, I think it's 22 to 25 million registered players in the country, which is, what did you say, three times the population of Uruguay and half the size of the population of Argentina. So clearly it's not a numbers issue. It's not a culture issue, because that soccer first culture does exist here. And so that was basically the gist of the reel. Okay, so let me get into some of the comments here, if you don't mind. Let's go with the first one from Magnus Football Club. He says, The bulk of the kids mentioned are rec. For those rec kids in the U.S., the average number of hours with the ball is 2 to 3 hours a week. The average South American kid spends 13 to 14 hours a week with the ball. Major difference. In the U.S., soccer is a hobby. In South America and much of the rest of the world, it is a way of life.
So it's just all superficial stuff. I know where they're coming from. I get it. I used to be this person. I used to be that guy. I used to think those sorts of things. And let's peel back a couple of thoughts. Number one is he mentions, well, yeah, but Gary, the bulk of the players that you mentioned that of the 20 million are recreational players here in the United States. Guess what? Everywhere else in the world, Germany, Portugal, Spain, Brazil, Uruguay, Chile, Holland, the vast majority of all those players that play over there are rec players too. They're not in professional academies. They're not crushing it like top level. They're all rec. All of them are recreational players. So that gets wiped right off the table immediately with that comment. He goes on to say, I'm writing down the comments as you say them. He piggybacks on that idea that here they're only, training or playing 2 or 3 hours a week. And in South America, it's 13, 14 hours. Nonsense. First off, where are you getting those numbers from? Okay. This is a whole other topic about research and numbers and sources and all the fucking trash. Okay. If you're relying on that sort of stuff. You go to Argentina now, and we have friends in Argentina. Facundo, who instantiated this whole thing, is living in Argentina, right? He is Argentine. My whole heritage is Argentine. The kids aren't, millions of kids, hundreds of thousands of kids aren't playing 13, 14 hours a week in Argentina. You have no idea what you're talking about. That's not happening. That's not happening, okay? Only the top end players are doing that stuff. The people who are super passionate about it, Benny, are playing 10, 12 hours per week on the streets, at their club, in indoor facilities, in futsal, all that. But guess what? In the United States, that exists too. You know, the Mexicans and the Mexican Americans and Latino Americans and all the immigrant Americans in the United States, their kids, the hardcores, the real cultures, they are also putting in long, big time hours. And if you don't like me saying that, part of the evidence is, first off, we have firsthand experience with this stuff. It's not just me blabbing my mouth. Our teams that we have coached for the past 20 years in the United States are comprised of that demographic that I just said, and their parents and those kids, those families, they are playing at least 10 hours per week on football. They are touching the ball religiously. So I have firsthand experience with it. Number two is with our teams, we would go and compete with the Mexican teams, with the South American teams. We played against River Plate. We traveled to Europe and competed against the real Barcelona and the real Ajax academies, the top of the top of the top of the line. And we're going one-on-one with them. Close matches. We drew matches against FC Barcelona when it was their crown jewel. We drew 4-4 with Ajax, the real academy, Benny. And none of our players were deficient compared to their players. And it's not just us, Ben. You see now MLS academies and these MLS Next or ECNLT, whatever it is. But you see them playing these GA Cups or Adidas Man City Cups. They're playing against the rest of the world academies, and we're competing like for like. It's not like we don't have technical players or good players at the youth level. All of this is nonsense. The whole comment is nonsense, Ben.
Yeah. He also goes on to say, Gary, 3 hours versus 13 hours a week, hours over 10 years, 6,000. Okay. But then he says the hours spent makes all the difference at the beach, at the dinner table, at the park, at family gatherings, culture. Okay. Now
that's happening with us too, Ben.
Right. Now I understand that it is happening here. Do you think though, Gary, I have a feeling that in other countries, Uruguay, Argentina, Mexico, that it happens more than it does here. Even if you say that we have the culture here and there are families like that here, it seems like in other countries, like football is their entire life. Even if we have like a lot of soccer first households and that culture is here, it seems like everywhere else around the world, like football is their religion. And here it's I don't know, kind of on the back burner, even if it's the family's favorite sport or they watch it all the time. Do those little details make a difference, Gary? Like football is everything for them. Everything, bro.
No, yes, absolutely. The problem with these comments and all this lies in not pinpointing the cause of these sorts of things. Okay. So a couple things. One, I'm going to still piggyback on what I just said earlier. One is you have that view also, Benny, and I agree with you, but I have that view. Everybody has that view also, because what we predominantly see here in the United States is the suburban, middle, upper middle class, affluent people running soccer in this country. And so we are inundated every time we go hop onto a field, or online or everything, we are inundated with that demographic. That is all we see for the most part. We see that. And so the fact that we are constantly bombarded with that demographic, that culture, which is a shit culture, a soft culture, a non-hardcore culture, that immediately biases our views to saying, yeah, but come on, Gary, in the United States, and it's not like in Uruguay, you know, it's not like in Holland, because we're biased, because we're force-fed this bullshit culture. And the real culture, the Mexican leagues, the stuff that you have seen on the weekends here in Southern California, Benny, where the parents go bananas over the game, the kids go bananas over the game, there's fights, there's all kinds of drama happening on the sidelines. All of that is shielded from us. You see it because you've been around your friends and us and everything, and we were part of that culture, so we would go to those things. So you see a little bit of it, but we're still all shielded from it. And now it goes into the next point, Benny. That culture here is not allowed to rise and overcome the bullshit suburban, white, middle, upper middle class, affluent control. They're not allowed to rise. They're not allowed to rise. So does it make a difference what it's like in Argentina versus what it is here? Yes, because the hardcores are running the show in Argentina, but the hardcores here are not running the show. They're not allowed to run the show. They're not allowed to rise up the ranks of the hierarchy. So it matters, Benny, you are correct, but let's pinpoint the reason. The reason is we are not allowed to rise. The culture here that does exist is not allowed to expand and flourish and multiply.
Got it, Gary. When you were saying all that, I'm wondering, like, just trying to look at it from another angle too. You think about the U.S. soccer, right? And a lot of the times the stereotype that gets brought up is the suburban culture. But I'm wondering if, like, having money, living in the U.S., living a comfortable life, I'm wondering if that ties into it too. Because if you look at poorer countries that are producing way more talent, way more world-class players, like, think about when you're here in the U.S., Gary, if you're a family and, I mean, you're living relatively comfortably, right? There's a lot of distractions that maybe other families around the world don't have. For example, going out to the movies or going to dinners or doing all these different types of things. And so even if you say you're a soccer first family here, there's other stuff that maybe that you're doing. So having some sort of comfort and money to allow you to do other things, maybe that's also taking away from time spent playing the game. Whereas if you're in, I don't know, Chile and your family has no money, what are the parents going to do? They're going to go to the park every day and they're going to play with their kids. Like, it costs nothing to play soccer, bro. You know what I mean? I'm looking at it from that angle of having money and having a comfortable life here.
I agree. I think that is a huge element. It makes us softer and weaker. And hence, I am a believer that that also influences the strength and the mentality of the player themselves to survive. The thing that I think is not well understood, however, Ben, actually, let me take it this angle. I'm going to try to kill two birds with one stone, okay? Because you'll see other comments saying, oh, we have world-class NFL players and NBA players, Major League Baseball. Like, look at Kobe Bryant, look at LeBron James, look at all these sorts of people. Okay, but then how do you explain what you just said? Because they grew up in the United States. They were comfortable. They were cushy. They weren't in the slums, poor. Kobe wasn't poor. He was okay. He didn't have to break out and be the superstar that he became. He could have just been like, if this basketball thing doesn't work out, I'm good. I can still have my in and out. I'm still going to be able to go, out to eat. I'm still going to have a decent life, a good life. So the explanation of being poor only goes so far, right? There's something else. And you can look at all the other athletes of the United States. I'm prodding the folks who think the United States is the best place for athletes, right? We have the best athletes in the world. It's a whole nonsense narrative, by the way. But I'm going to use your point against you. We're comfortable here. Got a lot of money. Nobody has to become a professional athlete and be a millionaire to escape poverty here. Nobody really has to do that. So why do we have all the best athletes in the world then? Nobody's trying to escape. You get what I'm saying?
I do.
So that is not the root cause in any way, shape, or form as to why we don't have crack soccer players.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's a root cause. I'm just thinking it's a small cog in the machine that could be a factor,
It is. It's the environment matters, Benny. The environment, the incentives in the system matter. Why do we have such successful entrepreneurs? And why are we like the technology hub? I mean, people can dispute this with China, obviously, and India on the rise as well. But I you get the point. Why do we create such incredible technology and companies and corporations here? And we know we're a beacon of progress. Of human civilization in the United States, because to build these sorts of things, the entrepreneur, the founders, the mental fortitude that you have to build something, Ben, it's outrageous. It is pain and suffering like a mother effer. And we don't have to do it. We can just get a 9-to-5 and be comfortable and be okay. So why do they do it? And so many of these tech people, they don't have to be founders. They can go and make several hundred thousand dollars a year or more working for somebody else and not putting up with chewing glass every single day and trying to build a company. And yet they do. Where does that come from?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, Gary. Another thing I'm thinking about too is you hear all the time, Gary, like, oh, my dad was a police officer and my grandpa was a police officer and his dad was a police officer. So now I'm going to become a police officer. I'm guessing like all around the world, it's like, my grandma was a diehard Chivas fan and now my mom is a Chivas fan and my great grandma is a Chivas fan. So now I'm invested in it. That's my team. That's my life. Here, it's not the same, bro. You know what I'm saying? It's like, my grandma could give two fucks about soccer. You know what I mean? So it's just like, it runs so deep in other countries. And I know the game has been around here for a while, but I just know that it's in your DNA, bro. And here it just doesn't feel like that.
No, well, the system never allowed that to flourish here. Soccer has been in the United States over 100 years. People don't know. The US Open Cup is one of the oldest running federation run soccer competition in the world. Okay. And you can go back in history 50 to 100 years ago and you can see the newspaper clippings of countless professional teams that exist in the United States, countless. And everything ends up eventually collapsing, but it has nothing to do with the lack of popularity of soccer, nothing to do with it. The NFL didn't exist or wasn't around or wasn't to its prominence back in the day. Either was basketball, either was anything else. Soccer was on equal footing with everything and even ahead back when it was very immigrant, United States was incredibly immigrant dominated. The reason it fails is because we didn't have an open ecosystem then either. Everything was closed. Oh, look at the NASL, Gary, of the 70s when they brought Beckenbauer and Pele and all the Cruyff and all the global superstars in the 70s, and it still failed. How do you explain that, Gary? Because it was a closed system. There was no open ecosystem. There was no promotion relegation. And so it collapses, and then something else comes up, and then that collapses, and then MLS comes up. And guess what? Maybe it'll collapse. Maybe it won't collapse, but it doesn't foster the culture that you just described. Because if you're constantly collapsing things, the great grandparents and the grandparents and the parents and the kid don't have one thorough string to cling onto, one club over the generations, because they end up disappearing. Why do you think USL championship clubs and USL clubs fold or go away? Because MLS destroys them. It's predatory. Oh, look at Austin Bold. How about we helicopter in, Austin FC, an MLS franchise, right there where the USL championship club is. What do you think is going to happen? The USL championship club goes away because all the casuals, everybody, it's all for suburbanites, they're going to go to the MLS team. Oh, look at San Diego Loyal. They're doing quite well there in the USL in San Diego. How about we drop an MLS franchise on their head? And then they have to go away, Benny. So it is a destructive, toxic system that exists.
Yeah. You basically answered the next comment, but somebody else replied to the thread, so I want to give you a chance to have at it. This Oscar 415 says, we produce many cracks in every other sport, but ultimately it's pay to play. And then you say other sports are not international, so no one knows whether cracks have actually been produced in the same sense. Regarding pay to play, that is a symptom of the fundamental issue, not the cause. Okay. And now Chris,
Can I pull on that? Yeah, I want to make it very clear for the audience here who say, oh, well, we're world-class in American football and world-class in basketball and world-class in these other sports. Okay, we're world-class because the rest of the world doesn't really play them or doesn't play them to a great extent at all. So how do you actually know how good the NFL players actually are? You don't know. You play with yourself. You only have yourself to reference against. There's no international gridiron football competition. And then the one that's really interesting and people are waking up to is basketball. When basketball started picking up steam around the rest of the world, look at what's happening to the NBA. Many of the best players in the NBA are not American anymore. They're imported from overseas. Oh, how is that possible? We have the best league. We have the best athletes. We have the best environment. We have the best youth system. And all of that is nonsense. If overseas, they don't have any of these sorts of things, and we're in the NBA saying, nope, they're better than the Americans. Let's bring their asses over here.
Yeah, Gary.
So all these years, you have no idea whether the best coaches are in the NBA or in the NFL or in baseball. You have no fucking clue. You don't know if it's the best players are actually there. All you know is that gatekeepers with their biases or their view of American football or basketball or baseball, they picked and choose who they wanted to elevate. That's all.
Yeah.
And there's no relegation in any of these sports. So how much do the games really matter? How much are they really forcing themselves to be at maximum intensity and maximum capacity every single training session, every single game? Major League Baseball, bro, you know how fucking boring that shit is, dude? The games don't even fucking matter. The games don't matter. You think every at-bat and every time, you know, you're on defense in baseball, that they're all stretching themselves 100%? No, because if you lose a game, it's like, yeah, okay, it's just one fucking game out of 180,000 games in a season. It's not that big a deal. So how good are these players actually?
Yeah. Gary,
people don't like to hear this, dude.
Well, this is what Chris says. He says, 3-4-3, not true. Basketball, best player in the NBA is creation, which is what you just said. The future star is the 7'7 Frenchman. So why do you think countries like Spain, France, and Argentina are able to produce so many NBA stars in such a short time, but we still don't have a global soccer star from the US? This is the one thing I agree on with them. And please don't say Pulisic is a global star, because he isn't.
He's not a global star. He's not. We're incredibly biased over here. The Americans have finally have a player who, like, does good stuff overseas and is important overseas, and we think that they're world class. Did you see the whole uprising of Pulisic not making the Guardians top 100 players of 2025 or something? And people are having a cow over here. I'm like, guys, dude, wake the fuck up. Wake the fuck up. And then they start citing me statistics. Oh, well, he is, you know, he's tied with Lautaro Martinez, you know, for the best goal scorer in Italy right now. And you sound like an idiot NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball playing card, you know, memorizer. You know, you try to rely on these superficial statistics to make your case. I get it. It's fine. You're a fan. That's what you do. But there's so much more to it, Benny.
Right. Did you see the clip with Alexi Lalas? And I forget who he was with, but it's like us. Fucking Alexi's leading, and he's like, all right, I'm not going to speak until I see a picture of a player that's better than Pulisic. And bro, they list out like world-class players, like, all right, Phil Foden. Alexi Lalas is like, nope. Bukayo Saka. Nah, I don't think so. And it goes on for like six or seven, like world-class, maybe not world-class, but like international, like fucking phenoms. Or, and Alexi Lalas is like, nah, like Pulisic is better. We gotta inject that clip, bro. Hilarious.
So wild. It's so wild, dude.
Crazy. The bias is crazy. All right. Coach Fernandez, 2024. One reason and one reason only. This is the stupidest one, Gary. It's not a kid's way out. Basketball, NFL, baseball players look at their salary. So if you're a kid growing up poor, what would you like to be? A soccer player in the U.S.? An NFL kicker makes more money than 10 MLS players combined.
Okay, let me address this. We have it in the past. Let's address it again. So many flaws with this argument. Number one, a kid is not sitting there growing up thinking, which one of these am I going to make more money in? And then go and pursue that. No, fucking kids aren't doing that. Okay. And don't come at me with some stupid anecdote that your friend or your own kid or something. Kids in general, the millions of kids are not sitting there with pen and paper saying, how much does an MLS player make? How much does this guy make or that guy make? And then decide what sport to play. That's the dumbest shit ever. Okay. And the parents are also not doing that calculus. Oh, well, let's not go with soccer because, you know, my kid can't make that much money in soccer. Let's go with football. Come on, bro. What are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? Secondly, this is also flawed. Why are you comparing it to MLS? Compare it to what soccer players make around the world. Why don't you bring up the salaries of the Premier League players? Why don't you bring up the salaries of La Liga players, and right? Top teams in La Liga, or top teams in Germany, first division, or the top teams in France. Why aren't you bringing up all of that? There's way more players making just as much, if not way more money if you take the global context, than players in the NFL or in baseball or anywhere else. Furthermore, if you crack it as a soccer player at that level, unless you get injured, you have a whole career's long worth of that type of money. Versus if you look at the statistics, if you make the NFL or NBA or whatever, you're out of the game really fast if you're not really cracking it. And if you're not really cracking it and you're like a bench player, you aren't making massive money. Compared again to global soccer. So it's flawed all around. I get it. I used to be that guy, Benny. I'm not mad at him. I used to be like that. You just don't know any better.
Yeah. What's funny, Gary, is I remember being a kid. I'm 7 years old. I'm like, yeah, I want to be a professional soccer player. And your friend tells you like, oh yeah, you're going to make $1 million. And you're as a kid, you're like, oh fuck. That's amazing, dude. You know? And even so, it's not, even if my friend is like, oh, you'll make 10 million playing football, I would be like, I don't give a fuck. I don't like football. I don't want to play football. Like, yeah. Soccer's my thing, dude. It's like, you're so right, dude. No kid is doing that calculus in their head of like, oh yeah, let's see the most money I can make so I can set myself. Bro, they're not thinking about that. Come on.
Bro, okay, then why are nobody's sitting, think of it the other way. No kids are sitting there thinking, okay, who makes the most money? Like what profession? Doctors, right? Lawyers or engineers or entrepreneurs. You know, no kid is sitting down thinking those sorts of things and saying, okay, I'm going to go be a doctor then because it looks like they make the most. The kids aren't doing that.
Yeah.
So dumb. Dumb. Right. So dumb.
Hopefully that's the last time we'll have to bring that one up. All right.
No, we won't, man. We're going to talk about it next week again.
Probably, bro. In just last thing, in regards to the parents making that calculation, I can kind of see that a little bit more, dude, because every parent, not every, I shouldn't say every parent, majority of parents' vision and goal is that they think their kid is going to be the next superstar, you know? And so maybe if a dad is, he likes football, he kind of likes soccer, maybe he's going to be like, oh, you know what? Like, yeah, I want my kid to take care of me in the future. So I'm going to enroll him in football. I can kind of see that a little bit more in terms of the parents, bro. Can you?
Wouldn't that also be the case of from a safety perspective? Wouldn't be like, oh fuck, I'm not going to enroll my kid in football because that seems dangerous, and I don't want my kid hurt.
They don't give a fuck, dude. They're all about the Benjamins.
Dang, they care more about money than their kid. Wow, Benny.
Whoa. The Blind Side, bro. You seen that movie?
No.
You don't know that story?
Nope.
It's like there's this like homeless like black kid, and he's like this massive guy, bro, and this white family in somewhere in the South, I forget which state, but they end up like adopting him, and then he plays college football and he goes on to the NFL. But after he goes on to the NFL, people started accusing the family of just like adopting him because they knew that he was gonna go pro just to make money, bro. So there you go. The Blind Side parents, bro. Sick ass movie, bro. Sandra Bullock. All right. It's not a population, or who do I trust myself? Is this guy's Instagram. It's not a population issue. Soccer isn't the main sport in the US, and that matters. Many of our most naturally athletic kids, especially black kids, are funneled early into football and basketball, not soccer. In countries like Uruguay or Brazil, kids with that same athletic profile grow up playing soccer daily, under pressure with freedom and accountability. Add pay-to-play, over-coaching, and fragmented pathways in the U.S., and it's easy to see why environment, not numbers, is the real difference in producing cracks.
Well, he's right with that last statement, environment and is what produces cracks, but he completely misses the mark. It's like, first off, we kind of already answered the first part about athletes choosing one sport over another, fucking nonsense, okay? But even more important than that, and really wipes the floor with this view, is look at the physical attributes, i.e. physical profile of Argentinians or Uruguayans, right? Because he mentions Uruguay too. They don't look like NFL players or basketball players. They're not that body type. And what are we talking about? Actually, the body type that you're talking about, NFL, basketball, they don't even make it to be a pro soccer player. Very rare, because that's a terrible body profile to play soccer and be good at soccer. Absolutely terrible. Would it be good if NFL, NBA, MLB did not exist in the United States? Yeah, it would be good because it would amplify our playing numbers from 20 million soccer players, registered soccer players now, which is enormous, Benny. It would amplify it to 40 or 50 million, even bigger pile. Would we improve? I'm sure we would improve a bit. Law of large numbers, but our environment is completely toxic. And those players would not turn out to be world-class players. Reggie Bush choosing soccer, Deion Sanders choosing soccer instead, Bo Jackson choosing soccer instead of those sports, those guys would not turn into Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo or Lamine Yamal or Phil Foden. Or it's a different sport, ladies and gentlemen.
Agreed, Gary. This next
way, we do have you go to the youth soccer fields, you go watch people. There are phenomenal athletes on the soccer fields. we're not devoid of great athletes on the soccer fields. We are not. There's plenty of players that have the exact physical characteristics, or even better, than their world-class counterparts in South America. Like I said in the beginning of the episode, we ourselves personally have competed with our youth teams against the best in the world, and our players are not physically inferior to their players. On the contrary, if you go to any MLS showcase where the MLS teams are playing against European teams or South American teams, by and large, the MLS teams have better athletes than their global counterparts. And that is also, by the way, why many a times at the youth level, there's some good results that come in. Oh, MLS team beat Manchester United or whatever. But what happens then at the pro level when the physical attributes, that shit doesn't matter anymore? That's the other thing, Ben. In soccer, it's not 1v1. It's not all about matchups. In NFL, it's a lot about matchups, 1v1. Wide receiver and his opposing defender, whatever, it doesn't even come to my mind anymore, okay? Or in basketball, 1v1 matchups all over the floor, okay? So athleticism takes over a lot more in those instances. In soccer, if you have a supreme athlete, and it's 11v11, you have a supreme outlier athlete, a collective team can wipe the floor with an individual. We know this because we're coaches. You just game plan to eliminate them. Unless you're somebody like Messi, who it doesn't matter. He's going to kill you anyway. But we play against Nigeria, Ghana, all the profiles that this guy's talking about, he's talking about black people. He literally says black people. Right? He says all our black players or whatever. Okay, look at Nigeria, Cameroon, Ghana. You mentioned it. Pick as many black countries as you want who have full-on black national teams. They don't win the World Cup. They're not contenders. What's the problem? Oh, they're poor, by the way. They want to get out and make money, right? So that goes out the window, too. It's their number one sport. They don't have NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA. What's the problem? Why aren't they wiping the floor with white boy Argentinians? Kind of strange. Things to think about.
Very strange, Gary. All right, I know this one's going to seem like beating a dead horse because we've talked about this so much, but hopefully you can put this one to bed, Gary. Probably not, though, because we're still going to get comments. Pay-to-play club system. He also goes on to say, which is the correct thing, no promotion relegation system in the top division and ownership in the professional league. But that was a common theme among all of the comments, Gary. The problem is pay to play. Put it to bed, Gary.
Pay to play exists at the scale it exists in this country and at the magnitude it exists in this country because there is no promotion relegation at the professional level. So since there's no promotion relegation at the professional level, that is why we have youth-only clubs in this country to the scale and degree that we do. Because there is no reason for a soccer club to have a first team, a professional team, an adult team, because the system is closed, meaning that adult team, that quote-unquote pro team, has no pathway to go up the divisions. And since there's no pathway to go up the divisions, there's no pathway to economic success, monetary success, business success, revenue generation from the professional or adult team. It would be a money-losing endeavor like a mother effer to have an adult team or a pro team in this environment. So what happens then? Youth clubs just remain youth clubs. And then what is the business model? Instead of having a business model where you are incentivized to develop players as best as you possibly can and scout as best as you possibly can and do all the right things as best you possibly can to develop them for your own first team to hopefully be able to make it better and rise the divisions, or at the very least, sell those players to higher division teams or overseas. Since that does not exist, what is the business model of a youth club then? It is pay to play. It is, we, for us to survive, We have to pay fields. We have to pay coaches. We have to, it costs money to run this enterprise. It's not free, ladies and gentlemen. So we have to charge parents for their kids to come and play. That is why pay to play exists at the scale and magnitude that it does. Pure and simple, there's no promotion relegation at the professional level. And everywhere else in the world, there is. And so the business model changes for their youth operations. Completely changes. They are all about development, or mostly about development. And it should be noted, Benny, that in the rest of the world, there still is pay to play. Absolutely. People seem to think that it's free. That's not true. Okay. It is pay to play, but it's not at the scale and the magnitude that it is here. People overseas aren't paying the equivalent of $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $7,000 for their kid every year to play. That's true. It's a lot less. But let's not be naive and say that there is no pay to play. There absolutely is. Is there anything I miss?
No, but Gary, let me ask you a hypothetical question. Okay. Let's say pay to play was magically wiped out, right? We always like to use this guy. Elon Musk comes in and says, hey, I'm going to donate $20 billion so that every kid in the US can play for free if they want to. Okay. But the system at the top is still closed. Would we all of a sudden start producing mega cracks, Gary? World-class players if there was no way to play?
No. Because what's the incentive to develop players or develop a crack? What is the incentive? And here's where people naively start chiming in or ideologically start chiming in. Oh, well, as you know, coaches should just do it because it's in their heart. If they have a good heart, they would want to develop players and develop to... Yeah, all that's fine, but like, what makes you think that that's not happening already? And we've talked about it so much, Benny, that all the bullshit that coaches have to put up with and clubs have to put up with and club directors have to put up with from parents, it's just a huge headache, man, and that beats you down and beats you down and beats you down and beats you down. So you actually can't work in peace. So even if you wanted to develop, truly develop as best you possibly can a player, there's all these other forces in your face, forcing you or incentivizing you to not do what is in the best interest of the player.
Yeah.
Stupid shit. Stupid ideas. People who are well-intentioned. Oh, the players at the youth level should be rotated all the positions. But you as a coach, you as a practitioner, as a craftsman, no, that's bullshit. No, the players should not be rotated all over the field all the time. I'm not going to dive down this rabbit hole. We've done it in other episodes. Maybe we'll dedicate time to it again. But people have these silly, naive, non-practitioner ideas about development and that they want to foist upon you. And you know it's wrong. You should not do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if I answered your question, Benny. Yeah. If we magically got rid of pay to play, but the system was still closed, no, we're not developing players. You're not going to develop a crack. No chance.
Yeah. Another angle to look at, Gary, and I'm just going to continue to play devil's advocate in here.
Yes.
And chime in on what I hear other people say. You look at a country like Spain or France or basically any other high level country in the world that produces quality players. When they're 7, 8, 9 years old, okay, think about the players that they're playing against every day. And even if they're only playing 2 or 3 times a week, right? You're a kid in Spain. Doesn't matter if you're playing rec or if you're playing for an academy, you're playing against fucking 10 other Iniestas, right? If you're a kid here, even if you're the best on the team, you're playing against another 10 Jordan Morrises. Okay. So after a span of 10 years playing against that type of competition, playing against that quality, you know, who do you think is going to develop more players?
So I think, Benny, I know what you're saying. I think there's a huge degree of mythology to that, a huge degree of it not being true. And again, I'm going to lean on my experience just so that people understand that I'm not just talking theoretically or hypothetically. When we would go to Europe every single year and compete in tournaments over in Europe every single year with our own youth teams, the youth teams over there aren't all great at all. Some of them are absolute trash, Benny. We would go and thrash them, okay? And they were legitimate academies, okay? So I'll give you an example. In Spain, you can look up the tables. I don't know if they still publish them or whatever. I'm sure they do. You can look up the division that FC Barcelona's academy plays in. And you look at that, and they only have like a handful of competitive games, right, where the other teams are really competitive. And then they annihilate everybody else. 10-0, 12-0, 15-0, 20-0. So the whole notion that you're getting amazing competition week in and week out is just not true. There's a lot of weak-ass club teams in Europe.
Yeah. No, but okay, even those teams that, let's say they're at the bottom of the table, they're losing 10-0, 15-0. They're still playing against fucking badass competition. So if you look at them 10 years down the line versus any other team here in the US, I bet you they would, one, they've developed like a motherfucker playing against those teams and seeing how the level should be. I think you put them against any US team, they're going to smash, bro. You know?
I don't know about any youth team, Ben, because I go back to, if you look at the teams here in the United States that are at the top tier, quote unquote, top tier, right? The MLS academies or something. They're very competitive with every single overseas club that they come up against.
Right.
They might lose by a goal. They might draw the game. They might even win some games. So I just don't subscribe to this notion that, oh, everywhere else, they're swimming in talent and you know, iron sharpens iron, and they're all Iniesta's over there, and they're all getting better and better and better. It's just not the case.
Yeah. That's why I told you, devil's advocate. All right, Gary, let me ask you, there was another comment from, her name's Liv Melius, and I think her dad runs the account, Gary, but this, I think this girl's like, I don't know, 10 years old. Absolute baller, bro. Like the videos that she posts, I've actually seen her train. So with a lot of respect for her and her dad, but they say another problem is lack of good training at the youth club level, which is also mostly rec. So how much of the issue, Gary, is the coaching, and how much does the coaching play into, you know, the development of world-class players?
Yeah. Does it matter? Yeah, it matters. I'm trying to come up with the best way to communicate this through the audio medium. It's very difficult. But if you look at a developing of a player, there's all kinds of factors that go into it, okay? And coaching is just one of those many factors. How big of a factor? I don't know. Let's just say it's 10%, okay? Because and I give it something like 10% because, look, Brian could be training a rec kid, and he's not going to make that rec kid who's already 13 years old into a pro. It ain't going to fucking happen. Zero chance. Okay. So clearly the coaching can't be 50% or 70% or 80% of it. So let's just say it's 10%, Ben. Is it important? Yeah, it's still absolutely important because 10% is 10%. If we're talking about developing professionals or cracks, top of the pile internationally, the difference between somebody who is a 100% world-class player and somebody who's 90% of that is enormous, right? Or somebody who's 80% from the 90%. Huge, huge difference. So every little percentage point, think about an asymptote, right? In development. So you go up and you start curving and you start plateauing and you can never reach Messi's level, right? That he's like the asymptote, and you can only get closer and closer and closer and closer, but you'll never get there. That's the perfection, if you will. It's those last few percentages that make a huge difference. Those last few percentages are the difference, say, from Sergio Ramos compared to, I don't know, Tim Ream or something like that. Sergio Ramos may only be 6 percentage points better than Tim Ream. But those 6 percentage points is the difference between Real Madrid legend and MLS guy. You get me? So coaching does matter, Ben. And to the commenter, he is right. We do have shit coaching, shit training in this country. but I think it's the other 90% that let's get the other 90% in order, because that's really the bulk of it all.
Yeah. And Gary, I have a feeling like in other countries around the world, like let's just pull on the order right there because we've been talking about them a lot. It's not like they have like elite world-class coaches at the youth academy level, right? Like, so do coaches matter? Absolutely they do, but is that what's making the difference? I don't think so. Like, okay,
correct.
You look at Messi, I'm sure Messi is still Messi today if he had a complete different set of coaches. You know what I'm saying? It's not the coaches that make the player. Sure, they can influence them and guide them, but is that what's going to decide if you become a pro or not, your coach? I don't think so.
Right. And actually me giving 10% is quite a lot. And I'm giving 10% here in this environment, the United States environment, because let's say if you're in Real Madrid's academy or Barcelona's academy, and I'm saying those names just because everybody knows about it, right? I could be saying Betis or Real Sociedad or anybody. They can swap coaches, youth coaches in and out. It won't make a fucking difference as to production or output or if the players are going to be that much better or that much worse. It barely makes a little blip. So over there in those environments, the coach, maybe it's a 2% influence, right? But here it's 10%. Here it's kind of massive. And yes, to follow up on what you said, you know how many coaches I've known that are overseas, me speaking to them in their environment overseas, or they have immigrated here to the United States and are coaches here now. You know how many of those guys I've spoken to, and this is what Argentines say, they're donkeys. They are terrible. They know nothing, okay? So this whole idea that overseas the coaching is so superior and so much better, bullshit, trash. There's trash over there like there's trash over here.
Yeah. Well, Gary, yeah, I mean, this is a question now for me, okay? Is it possible for the U.S. to produce a world-class player without an open system? You know, so my big thing to you is like, what is, obviously we know the solution that you've been speaking out for the past 5 years, right? No open system, no promotion relegation. But if you're a parent listening to that, or if you're like a young kid listening to this, is there any hope for you to become a world-class player living in this country? Like how do we make it happen? Obviously, let's say there's no open system in this country for the next 20 years. Should a parent or kid just give up hope that they're ever going to become a world-class elite player?
Well, I don't think that's cause for despair, because let's be real. Like, who's out there thinking, parent or kid, being, oh, I can never be a world-class player. Well, like, you know, I'm so depressed now. You know, it's not a thing. It's not a thing.
If they're listening to this, Gary, and after everything that we just said, right, there's no open system, there's no incentive, there's no opportunity for your culture or community to rise in this country. So after listening to this, they might be feeling like, fuck, like, I don't know if I'm going to have what it takes to compete on the global stage.
So they can compete on the global stage. Pulisic is competing on the global stage. Chris Richards is competing on the global stage. We have all these players in Europe competing on the global stage. And they're good players. Okay. Are there more of those players here? Absolutely. The reason they're not in Europe is because of the monopoly fucking them over. Okay? Because they could all be in Europe too, competing on the global stage. So all of those things are possible.
All right, well, let me rephrase it, Gary. How do you become a top 100 Guardian player?
Well, Pulisic is close. And if you want to look at him as a case study, he got his ass out of here. His dad got him the fuck out of the United States as soon as humanly possible. So he was already in Germany at age 15 and debuting at age 6. So at 16, he's gone before he's 18, Benny. And I know people can't do that. Not everybody can do that because not everybody has the capability of getting a European passport. Like Pulisic is able to get a European passport because of his heritage. And so you're stuck here until you're 18. You can't actually go over there unless you have European blood in you and somehow, some way you do your paperwork and your visas and stuff. But the sooner you can get out, the higher the probability that you might have a chance. At least you can have a chance.
Yeah.
And if you can't, I mean, that's the key. That's the key. And there's pros and cons, as we all know, because many do go out and they're just not ready for that environment. But you know, every situation is different. Do you want to take your chance? You can go, but you might find out that you actually don't have what it takes. And then what?
Yeah. How early, Gary, let's say your parents are able to get a European passport. How early would you take your son or daughter over there? And well, obviously I'm not saying like, oh, you have to get offered a professional contract first. Maybe it's even you just move to Italy and join their local youth system there. Like, would you recommend that?
Well, I mean, there's still other things to that fall into consideration, you know, because you can't actually move to another country for soccer specific reasons. You know, FIFA, there's this whole FIFA scandal. Let's not go down this path, Benny. Kind of originated with also, you know, Brian us facilitating the move of Ben Letterman to La Masia when he was 12 years old or 13 years old in one of our trips overseas. And he became like the first American at La Masia. And shortly thereafter, you know, FIFA cracked down on this whole idea of moving to another country for soccer-specific reasons because there was a lot of abuse apparently occurring. And what is meant by that is a lot of clubs or agents would get kids from, say, Africa or something and take them to Europe and European academies and then just dump them there. And if they didn't pan out, then they were just destitute at that point. The kids were basically homeless. They had no money. They had nobody taking care of them. It was like a humanitarian sort of issue. And so they came up with rules. I forgot already what section it was, rule 30 or 30. I'd have to look it up again. Where you can't just do that anymore. So you kind of have to wait until you're 16 or 18 years of age to actually be allowed to go overseas and actually join one of these competitive programs. So the earliest, yeah, it would have to be 16 years old.
Yeah. Let's say your dad gets offered a job at.
Correct. Correct.
Spain,
correct.
Right? It could be.
That's
like
right.
That.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah. That there's those angles, right? Is trying to get a job over there or have a business and then have a corporate headquarters in Holland or something like this. And then you sidetrack it, but they've gotten wise to that stuff too, because the first attempt at sidestepping the rule was clubs would hire the parents of the player to have a job at the club, you know? And so anyway,
yeah,
I mean, it's a headache. It's a nightmare. Like, don't do that. So just get as good as you can here, but at the first opportunity, if you think it's for you, because it's not for everybody, then take a shot at it.
Yeah. Gary, was Ben Letterman, was he like clearly above the rest of the players? Like, wasn't he on the same team of Effer and Alex and Uli, all those guys? Was he just that good, or did Barca see something different in him than he saw, or that they saw of the other players?
He was one age group higher, so one age older. So it was a different group that he kind of grew up with. And the answer is no, he was not that much better or that much higher. And in many instances, I would say on par with and not super special. But he did have, again, that sort of Barcelona-esque, La Masia-esque profile to him, where he's a neat player, clean technical player, cerebral player, you know, in the image of the Xavis and the Iniestas, which was, this was during that era, you know, and so they were kind of scouting that stuff. And when Brian and Paul Walker, you know, went over to Barcelona and that team competed over there, you know, Benny shined against Barcelona, against La Masia's academy. And so imagine, this was back when Americans weren't really going to Europe, Ben. We were pioneers. Paul Walker at Barcelona USA, now known as TFA, Total Football Academy, was a pioneer, you know, along with Brian, in doing these sorts of things. And so that's why it was so shocking to Barcelona to see this American team not kick their own academy's ass, but compete at a very high level with their own academy and have special players of our own compete with them. So that blew their mind. They're like, what is this? And so that was what intrigued them so much. And that it was also a trigger as to why Letterman was afforded the opportunity to join.
That's crazy, Gary. Now everybody and their mother goes to Mick Cup and to all these international tournaments. Like I heard a team going and I started laughing. I was going, what? You guys are going? It's insane, dude. It's wild.
It's unfortunate. Like I don't care, right? We just keep rolling. We keep building. We keep becoming craftsmen. But it's kind of funny to think that nobody knows where all that started.
Yeah. Ah, fuck it. I bet you guys earned a lot of fucking respect from a lot of eyes in Europe, bringing those teams over and actually competing in those years.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
All right, Gary, let's end. I wanted to get to one more comment. It has nothing to do with any of this stuff, but you got to show some love to our boy who, I think this guy watches every episode the second it comes out, bro. Cyber X Shinobi. First pod of the year. Gary, why did you guys stop putting on 343 summits? Look forward to more discussions in 2026. Hope you and Eric Wynalda get to chop it up this year. And he also says 343 shirts are quality. And I can't wait to rock them at the first team training of the spring season. Keep rolling out merch, especially some 343 stickers. He has a legend, bro.
The summit. So for folks who are new to us or just not aware, we put on an annual summit. I don't even remember when the first one was, what year it was. Maybe it was like 2017-ish or 16. I don't know. And it was basically a coaching conference. Yeah, the first one was in Vegas. The second one was also in Vegas. And the third one, we did it at the university in a nice auditorium. And the reason that we stopped doing them is basically it made no business sense anymore. We did the first one, where I did the first one, or I decided to do the first one because people were kind of clamoring for it. And I thought it would be cool, you know, to bring together coaches from across the country and chop it up in a conference style. And then I would speak and Brian would speak and we would bring in guest speakers. I think the first year we brought in, you know, the academy director from a very well-known academy there in Barcelona, who is a feeder to FC Barcelona themselves. So it was cool thing. And when you look at it from a business perspective, Benny, you basically break even or maybe operate a little bit at a loss. I don't remember the numbers exactly, but the amount of work required to put that on from inception to breaking it all down is insanely high. A shit ton of work for no monetary benefit. Were there alternate benefits? Yeah, there was. Meet people, network with people. It just doesn't make sense, dude.
Oh, but Gary, you should want to work for free and offer value.
It's funny, man. It's so fun. Okay. I want those people who had that thought, please march into your boss's office tomorrow. Actually, don't even wait till tomorrow. Call him up right now and say, you don't get paid anymore. You're going to do it for free.
Yeah. We'll see if that happens. I doubt it. Yes. All right, Gary, let me bring up this Argentina thing. I'm surprised you hadn't heard about it. Argentina will stop calling up to its youth national teams any player who moves to Europe without first signing a professional contract in Argentina. Players who leave on a free transfer will be excluded from national team call-ups under a rule known as, I'm going to mispronounce this, Patria Potestad, designed to protect the interests of youth developing clubs. So basically you can't leave for free. And if you don't sign in Argentina first, there is no national team. I think there's a law right now that says, like if a kid is at an academy in Argentina, the parent has the right to basically end the contract and ship them off somewhere else for free. So you hadn't heard anything about this, Gary?
No, I hadn't. I'm just taking what you said at face value without knowing any of the details, any of the nuances, nothing. Just from what I heard from you, my reaction is that's tremendous bullshit, right? People aren't slaves. Kids in particular aren't slaves and aren't property, and they shouldn't be treated as such. And that's one of my biggest beefs with the monopoly here in the United States, the MLS monopoly, is that kids and families are treated like slaves. They own you. If you are born and raised in a MLS franchise, quote unquote, territory, then that franchise has the rights to your child. Your child cannot go and say you're born here in LA or close to Carson. Your child can't go and sign for the Portland Timbers or Houston Dynamo or New York City FC unless the LA Galaxy gives you permission and cuts some sort of deal with those other franchises. What the fuck is going on, Benny? You never even signed anything to agree to that even. And you're owned. So it's, bro, no, it's, guy, people just don't understand how things are here. It's so bad. And so what you just read to me about Argentina is giving me those sorts of vibes.
Yeah.
Why do they do it? They want control, more control.
Yeah. Let me read a little bit more just so you can have a better understanding. I'm sure you'll do your research after. But the AFA has announced a new policy following the case of Lucas Scarlato, a 16-year-old River Plate talent who left the club without signing his first pro contract and moved to Europe. He went to Italy using the Patria Potestad mechanism, which means parental authority that allows the transfer of a minor, meaning the club receives no transfer compensation. And then he said, yeah, any young player who chooses to leave Argentina through this route will no longer be called up to any Argentina national team at any age level. This decision aims to protect the investment and hard work of Argentine clubs, which dedicate significant resources to training and developing young talents. Hey, if this rule was in place back in the day, Messi wouldn't be on the national team.
Look, a lot of this is posturing too, because if the kid is ultra talented and makes it in Europe, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. You're not there. Imagine Messi goes overseas, or Lautaro Martinez goes overseas and violates the rule, right? And he becomes Pichichi in Serie A in Italy, or you think the national team is going to be like, nah, fuck that fool. Come on. So a lot of this is not real. And with respect to investment in the development of the player, a couple of things I need to say. Number one is let the free market decide. You don't own the player. Let the free market decide. So if the club thinks that this particular player is that good, then offer them more money to stay. Oh, he still rejects it? Offer him more. Oh, he still rejects it? Offer him the even better contract terms and get to the point where he stays. And if he still goes after all that, okay, then you as the club were not capable of keeping said talent. You don't deserve said talent. Or maybe you mistreated the talent. Maybe you treated the family like shit, and that's why they won't sign with you no matter what you offer them. You with me? Like, the free markets, Benny. We need free markets everywhere. Not this fucking bullshit. Power centralization and corruption and coercion and slavery, for lack of a better term. The other thing I need to mention on this is there's still FIFA's training compensation and solidarity payments. So it's not like the player leaves for free necessarily, as I understand it, because maybe in Argentina something weird is going on. But if the player was part of that professional club and then transfers over to Europe or another club over there, that club in Europe is going to have to pay River Plate or Boca or Argentino Juniors or Central or Newell's a compensation, training compensation, according to the outline and rules demarked by FIFA. So they are going to get something. They do get something, which, by the way, I'm actually against that whole mechanism. People here in America are brainwashed thinking that training compensation solidarity payments is a thumbs up, a great thing for the American player. It is absolutely not a good thing. Topic for another day.
Is that because players will get, I know you said topic for another day, but is that because a player could potentially be blocked by a club? Like, let's say as Roma comes and says, hey, I want to buy Johnny from, I don't know, LAFC. But then they find out what they're going to have to pay in the compensation, then they're like, all right, now fuck that. Is that why you say that, Gary? It's not good for the player?
It restricts mobility, freedom of mobility for the player. Like, what do you mean there's a $300,000 or $500,000 price tag on my head when I have signed no contract with my existing club? I've signed no contract, and yet there's this overhang, this price tag on my head. So imagine you're in an academy for an MLS franchise. You're not a professional player. You're not getting paid nothing. And you're not being offered a first team contract by the MLS franchise or any contract, or you're being offered a shit contract, or you're mistreated by the franchise and you want out because it's not best for you, or you deem it's not best for you. Your family says it's not best for you and you want out. You want to go somewhere else, and somewhere else is interested in you. You can't go because there's this $300,000 price tag on your head. Again, we're back to ownership. The franchise owns you.
Yeah, right. No, when I saw that about Argentina, I was shocked, bro. Because, I mean, think about it. This is coming from a country that just won the World Cup. So you would think, like, what everything that they've been doing for the past 15, 20 years has been a good thing. But, like, imagine if U.S. soccer came out and said, hey, if you leave the MLS and go to Europe, like, you will never get called up to the national team again. That would be fucking wild.
That already happens. It goes unread, right? That already happens. It's just they don't write it down, because obviously here in the United States, there'd be lawsuits up the yin and yang, but they already do that shit here. You can look at the youth national team stuff. It's like the Red Bull here, New York City there, Inter Miami here. It's all MLS Academy kids.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there's the occasional European one, because maybe it's dual national. They don't want to lose the dual national, you know, because the kid is in Europe. Or there's the occasional European one that is kind of undeniable. You have to call them up. But they're already implicitly, if not explicitly off the record, tell you, if you're not in our MLS Academy, you can kiss the national team goodbye.
Yeah. You're talking about youth national team, though, right? Majority of those teams were made up by MLS franchises, MLS academies. Yeah. Sad, bro.
Well, people here are naive. They'll just be like, well, Gary, they have the best players. That's not true. How do you know they have the best players? At the youth level, they don't even let people who are not in MLS Next compete against their teams. When it used to happen, right, when we had the U.S. Soccer Development Academy and it was run by the Federation, and it wasn't just MLS academies, everybody was mixed together, MLS academies were, you know, would be embarrassed by non-MLS academies all the time. Up until recently, up until they kept consolidating power and centralizing and gatekeeping and kicking people out, you'd always see countless times non-MLS academy teams beating the shit out of MLS academy teams. So don't tell me that, oh, well, Gary, it's because all the best players are in MLS academies. That's not true. Not true.
Yeah. I'm depressed now, bro.
Why? Don't be depressed, man. This is great. Well, the more people learn how this shit works, the more progress everybody makes towards a better tomorrow.
It just seems like, I don't know, man. Very tough to make it here, bro. Very tough. And by make it, I mean be an international fucking global soccer fucking phenom, bro. You know what I'm saying? And I just wish we had more of them, because we have, like you always say, we have all the infrastructure, we have the money, we have the culture, but they're just, and bro, look at Japan, dude. I have a feeling in the next 10 to 15 years, Japan is going to start fucking cranking out some mega cracks, bro. A lot of the work, and thanks to Tom Beyer, bro, and all the work that he's done, but nobody can come to me and say like, oh, Japan has the best fucking soccer culture in the world, bro. You know, it's nothing like you would see in South America, but they're still out there fucking producing cracks, bro. They're not, bro. I have a feeling they're going to do well at the World Cup.
I hope so. I like them. I like the Japanese player. Also, I like the Japanese culture. And again, for people here just repeat utter nonsense. Oh, well, Gary, MLS just started. You know, we can't have promotion relegation. It's so fragile. Things will collapse or whatever. That used to be a common theme, you know, for the past 10 years. Like, guys, the fucking thing started in 1996. It's been 20 years and now it's been 30 years, right? What are we talking like? You're treating it, you know, Don Garber in his latest interview with that you mentioned last week with Landon Donovan and Tim Howard. By the way, both of them are obviously going to give Don Garber softball questions because they're going to loop him up because X, Y, and Z reasons. But Don Garber said, like, oh yeah, MLS is like a startup. You know, we're a startup here, you're building this. You're fucking 30 years old. You're not a fucking startup. You're 30 years old. You have 10,000 employees. You're not a startup company. You're an outrageously established company. So I don't know where I was going with that. It's something that you actually said. What did you say last? I had a point to make.
Oh, it's talking about Japan and how they're on the rise.
Oh, Japan. Yeah, Japan. So, hey, Japan's league, I think it's younger than MLS. I think it started 20 years ago. Or maybe you can look that up really quickly. They have promotion relegation from the very beginning.
Let's see.
Or if it's not from the very beginning, shortly thereafter. They have promotion relegation. They have a meritocracy. And their teams actually are clubs. They are clubs. They are independent entities in and of themselves. They own their own player contracts. They are not franchises or geographic offices like MLS teams are.
Yeah. The J1 League, 1993. Well, not too much later then. Or, yeah, before MLS. 3 years before.
When did promotion relegation start?
1999. When the J2 was formed.
Cool. 6 years later, promotion relegation, open market, open ecosystem. Let the clubs battle it out. Let them compete against each other for the services of the best players. Bidding wars for players, left and right. If you can survive, great. That means that you're the best or the most capitalized and have the best scouting departments, the best coaches, the best executives, the best sales, everything, right? And if you suck at all this shit, down you fucking go until you get your shit in order or you sell the club to somebody who can't get their shit in order. That's how this fucking thing works, Benny. We're in fucking America. Why are people fucking protecting a monopoly? Why aren't people about freedom, opportunity, and meritocracy? We're in fucking America, Benny. This is our founding principles. This is what made us great. Is ruthless competition. Who the fuck, and social economic mobility. If you kick ass, you can earn your way up the hierarchy. You don't, and there is no such thing as you permanently at the very top forever. Oh, Google, we're going to establish that you are the only allowed mass market search engine and browser forever. Nobody else is allowed to have that sort of privilege position but you, Google. We don't do that. Hey, do we have crony capitalism, massive corruption in all the under industries that are not soccer? Of course we do. Of course we. I'm not denying that at all. But here it's fucking in soccer. It's absolutely blatant. There is only one. It's MLS. That's it. That's it. There's nothing else. You got me worked up this episode, dude.
MLS or bust. Gary, we need to find a way to get you on Joe Rogan, bro, because I feel like if you do, then the mass is going to start to hear it all, and things are going to, that's going to be the tipping point, bro. Gary on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Eventually, Benny, eventually. I just like putting my head down and working. And then whatever, you know, when you do that, good things start happening.
True.
You just don't know when it's going to come or how it's going to come, but good things happen when you just put your head down and work. And that's what I'm all about. So would it be cool if I'm on Joe Rogan? Sure. Am I prepared to do that? Maybe. Could I be way better prepared? Absolutely. For example, it would be way better if, like, his world is UFC. He's known that shit inside and out forever. It'd be awesome if I dedicated a significant part of time to me studying as best as possible that world that is the UFC, so I can kind of link it, you know, to all the discussions that we've been having regarding promotion, relegation, and that sort of stuff. Because UFC's very different, just like boxing, just like tennis, just like these other sports that are non-team sports. It's just an individual that goes up and down the hierarchy, right? And there is a ruthless meritocracy there, but to a point only, because in the UFC, who makes the matchups? Who decides who gets a title shot and who doesn't get a title shot? What goes into that? It's not all a meritocracy in that case. They're just like, this one will make more money. The people like this guy and they don't like that guy. And, you know, we're going to make decisions based on that stuff too.
Dana White, bro. Dana White is Don Garber.
No, Dana White's a badass. I respect the shit out of that guy, man.
Whoa, he's a legend.
But see, with Dana White, again, this is why I want to learn more about that world. He's not a politician, as far as I can tell. He just tells it how it is. He's not hiding what it is that they do, in my opinion, to this day. Versus Don Garber and that whole cohort, it's all secrecy. It's all, how can we manipulate the market? How can we manipulate people? How can we craft narratives? How can we control the media to only be pro MLS and destroy everybody else? And they've done it, and they've done a very good job at it.
Yeah. No, I take Don Garber's comments as a compliment, bro. He says MLS is a startup. It's been 30 years. I was born in 1996, bro. So basically, he's calling me young. Startup. I'm a startup, dude.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thanks for that, Don Garber. All right, Gary, you really did get worked up on this episode. I like this. Any closing remarks or parting comments?
Look, when I respond to comments, either on X or Instagram or YouTube, and I try to not be aggressive, although sometimes I can't help myself, and sometimes it might even come across as aggressive, just know that it comes from a good place, because I was all you guys at one point. So when you tell me, or you're writing to me, oh, what's actually going on, what's actually the problem, what are actually solutions? Bro, I know your arguments better than you know them yourself. And that sounds extremely arrogant and cocky. But I am yet to come across a comment or these sorts of responses where I'm like, oh shit, like what? Like, that's an interesting perspective or take or whatever. I've seen them all. I lived them. I know what your arguments are. I know all the arguments, Benny. I was you, and I know how convinced you are of your own arguments. I know, because they're logical, they're rational, just like for hundreds or thousands of years, the sun orbited the earth. The earth was the center of the universe. It's obvious. It's very rational. It's very logical. Look up in the sky. You see the sun and all the stars go around you. So come on, guys, let's use our brain. The earth is the center and everything orbits us. Benny, I'm not calling these people illogical or irrational or anything. No, quite the contrary. They're very logical. They're very rational, but they are swimming on the surface. They don't see all the whole iceberg underneath the surface. They don't see the root problem. They don't see the incentives in the system. Like I spoke to Alec Lemon in our prior episode, two episodes ago, it's only when, I shouldn't say only, that's a very strong condition, but it's all, I'd say generally this is true. It's only when you are a craftsman, a practitioner, and you start really bumping your head up against the glass ceilings that exist, when you're operating at the edge of the state of the art, and you're trying to advance the state of the art, that you start realizing all the other shit that's going on, all the friction that exists, all the headwinds that exist. Because you don't get those sorts of headwinds and friction when you're not at the cutting edge.
Yeah, Gary, I forgot to tell you, when you commented back to somebody, basically saying what you just said, somebody was like, oh, your comment is why nobody likes soccer nerds or something like that. It's when somebody else says, you make good points. The only problem is that you're an American. So deep down, you're not a football man.
Yeah, people haven't done their homework.
Clearly. Clearly.
Why are you laughing, man?
That's just funny. I love seeing you go back and forth with people. It's funny.
No, you know, I came up with a nice little process now. So I have the Notes app on my Mac, right? And I have just a handful of responses written out there that are the same response to the classic canonical arguments that people make. So now all I have to do is highlight the appropriate response, copy it, and then paste it.
There you go.
Done. That way I don't have to be typing shit out anymore. It's like, oh, there's the other classic argument. Copy, paste, answer. Copy, paste, answer. Copy, paste, answer. And the reason I'm answering also more than anything, it's not for the person who's actually making the comment. It's for everybody else who would happen to come across our post or our content. Because people read comments. They go down in the comments and they're reading all this bullshit, right? And they become, instead of us educating, they're being anti-educated by the commenters. So they kind of have to be rebutted.
No, I'm glad you're doing that, dude. I think it's helpful for the viewer. All right, bro. Good stuff. Love seeing you getting worked up. That's how I know I've done my job here.
Yes, you have. You have earned your stripes today, Benny. Good
Love
stuff.
It. Love
All right,
it.
Man. Well, anything else from you?
Yeah, no. But like I said, for the audience's sake, Benny is a legend. And the first one, we'll get a free shirt, dude.
Dang, hot potatoes. You're dishing out shirts everywhere. Good. Hey, it'd be good for everybody who does get a free shirt. I mean, help us out also. And don't just sport it out there. Say, hey, you know, if you like it, and which I think you're going to like it, because we've done our homework and our research over years also on these shirts from different vendors and quality and all that perspective, try to, I don't know, spread the word, so to speak. Like, oh, hey, you don't like soccer? Who cares? You should get some of these shirts. Talk to your friends who aren't even into soccer. Say, hey, go buy some of these shirts. We're not selling them yet. We're not selling them yet, right? But help us build on that front too.
No, dude, I love the fact that there's so many of you that listen out there, and I really appreciate it. And something that I think is cool is I always come across people that I've known for a while, and then all of a sudden they tell me like, hey, bro, like, love the podcast with you and Gary. Like, for example, tomorrow I have a high school game against, I won't say the school, but the coach's name is Billy. And the last time we played, you know, we were texting after the game. I'm like, hey, good stuff, man. And he texts me back. He's like, yeah, you too. By the way, love the podcast. And I'm like, what the fuck, bro? I didn't even know you listened, dude. So shout out Billy. Hopefully we smack you guys tomorrow.
And I want to make one shout out as well to somebody I know listens pretty religiously. I want them to know I respect them sincerely, and I think they understand that, but I'm still going to fight against them. So Don, I hope you have a good off season right now.
Are you talking about listens. Don Barber?
Yeah, of course. So Don, happy new year. Let's see how we execute in 2026. All right.
Fucking get it right.
Why are you laughing, dude?
That was legendary, bro.
Oh, you know, let's end it with this. They were asking Argentinians on the street in Argentina, hey, if it's not Argentina, who would you want to win the World Cup? Almost all of them would say Brazil, right? And I too say Brazil. And even though it's probably the number one rivalry in the world of football, period. It's just massive respect for both countries from a cultural perspective and from a sporting perspective. I really, sincerely, I would want Brazil to win if it's not Argentina.
Really? I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, well, now you know.
Bro, I can't. When you were doing the shout out, bro, I thought you were like talking about like a member and you threw it out to Don Garber, bro. That's fucking hilarious.
I got you. You're still thinking about it.
I am, dude. I am. That was probably
why
the
you,
best. The best moment.
Why are you so shocked that he listens? Why are you so shocked?
No, it wasn't that. I was just caught off guard because like you sounded so sincere, like you were dedicating it to like a member or somebody in the audience. That's hilarious. Bro.
Well, are you saying that I was not sincere? I'm being sincere.
No, yeah, you sounded sincere. It just threw me off guard, bro.
This. All right, that's a wrap, bro. Benny.
Yeah, that's enough, dude. Good stuff.
Later. Thank you.
Later, bro.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.